Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. 800-531-3815, toll-free coast to coast. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pratt is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back.
Thank you, Jim. Good morning.
It's good to have you back. Good morning to you. And I'm sure you're excited to be back, aren't you?
Oh, boy. I just couldn't wait.
Every so often, you have to take a week off just because the excitement gets too intense, don't you?
I'm mainly excited about the big paycheck, though.
Oh, yeah, the big one. Yeah.
Well, oh, you know, I keep coming back.
And, of course, as you know, you're going to get a raise the first of the year because you're...
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're going to get your five-year pin. See,
oh,
first of the year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, pretty excited, huh?
I have no words. There are no words.
Words fail you at this moment, don't
they? Yeah.
And we're probably the better for that, too, by the way, folks.
Right. This is a family show.
She'll lash me off the air in a minute, folks. Okay, Joan, let's get into the letter. The first thing right out of the box is asking, Kiplinger is asking if there's any relief in sight for benefits costs. What's the answer?
Well, we say some. I mean, that's a little glimmer of hope. It's not a lot, but it's something.
You're such a Pollyanna.
We're saying things are just beginning to stabilize a little bit in a lot of areas.
So we might not like the number, but we kind of like the trend. Is that what we're saying?
Well, sort of, yeah. I mean, yeah. I nobody should go out and pop champagne corks over this. But
right. Nobody's going to get a big rebate from all
right.
this.
Right. But given the previous just insane increases, that this is somewhat good news.
Well, the benefit situation in America, and really, Joan, in the world, if you think about it, if you watch what's happening in Europe,
yeah,
the benefit situation, the entitlements, you might as well call them entitlement situation, because that's kind of where a lot of this attitude is among employees, and this whole thing is reordering itself in the 21st century, isn't it?
Oh, no question about it. It's true. And we've talked about this many times, that this employees have just traditionally over the last, I guess, half century, just assumed that the benevolent employer mm-hmm. was going to provide all these benefits as if they had some kind of right to them or the employer had some kind of obligation to provide them.
Yep.
And that really isn't the case.
Well, and again, as I say, that's happened in Europe. It's happened here. And the difference is in the United States, you know, though we're a little bit ahead of Europe in terms of getting things reordered so that they're a little more, you know, based on reality. And Europe is just now finding that out.
Europe has bigger problems because mm-hmm. a lot of their benefits are government-sponsored, and they're just sort of crashing under the weight of all these expenses. And
right.
the other problem that Europe is going to find, and I think Japan too, is that they don't have a good pension system. And this mass of retirees is going to retire. And the government isn't going to be able to afford all these pensions.
Right. Literally not going to be able to bail all of them out. And,
right.
And so there may be some revolution waiting to happen over there. But yeah. back in the USA, we may not like the numbers that we've got, folks, but it does seem that the rocketing increases have leveled off a little bit, doesn't it, Joan?
Right. And in particular, we're mostly interested here with health care expenses. We're saying they're not rising fast as they did in previous years. So, but we do say that they'll climb about 12% next year at larger
Golly.
Companies, and maybe a little more at small firms. So, like I said, this is not something to pop champagne corks over.
Well, and the reason that everybody needs to understand what's going on, Joan, employers and employees. Employers know all this, but the employees need to become part of they need to become stakeholders in their health care and work with their employers who are providing this to make sure that providing health care doesn't cost them their job or take the company down.
Right, right. That's just cutting off your nose to spite your face if you insist on health care but the company goes under.
Right. One of the things that you guys recommend is replace co-pays with co-insurance. Now, tell us what you mean by that.
Well, I find this interesting because if you think about it, a lot of these programs now are based on, certainly mine is based on my going to my doctor and paying, say, $20 for the visit or $10 for the visit, and that's just a set amount of money. But if you change it to a percentage basis, which is what co-insurance would be, if I go to a doctor who charges $100 as opposed to one who charges $200, I'm saving money.
Right.
Whereas with the copay, I just pay the same amount no matter where I go.
Well, you also will be a much more efficient consumer of medical services.
Well, exactly.
Now, I mean, your boss wants you to go if you need to go, but you know, if you don't have to go, you need to have the attitude that, well, you know, it's going to cost me more than $20. It might actually cost me like $45.
Right. If I take the more expensive doctor, when in fact the cheaper doctor may be just as good, it forces me to get involved in shopping for price and being economical.
Well, and also being judicious about going to the doctor.
Well, at all, right.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, I wonder how many people have over the years, you know, have gone to the doctor as a reason to get out of going to work.
Could be.
You know,
never me, of course. I would never do that.
But you know, and this all goes back to what we said a while ago, Joan. The employees have got to become partners with their employers in the providing of these benefits. We've got to get everybody pulling together, because it's not getting out of hand, Joan. The cost of health care, providing health care for employees, it's already way past out of hand.
Right, and the problem is you've got to change sort of a culture or a mindset where employees just assume that this is a sort of a given, that they should be getting these benefits.
Oh, listen, I mean, I can remember working for companies back in the 70s, late 60s and 70s, Joan, where there wasn't even a copay.
Oh, of course, me too. I had a deductible, but I could go to any doctor I wanted, and after the deductible was met, boy, that 80% was great.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, I think it's important that there are other things that can be done, and it's important that employers work with their employees to help them understand things like the importance of having a healthy lifestyle, educate employees, and reward. You guys point out that we should reward employees who have healthy lifestyles. How do we do that?
Well, one example we give here is that if the employee controls their weight or goes on a weight loss program, they might see their premiums drop or maybe even their coinsurance drop for their medical plan. So that's an economic incentive.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, what's behind all of this is preventative medicine. You know, if you can keep someone from actually developing diabetes down the road because they maintain a healthy lifestyle, you're going to save a tremendous amount of money.
Well, and not only in terms of the cost of the medical attention, Joan, but in terms of productivity for the company.
Exactly.
Don't forget, when you're sick, folks, you can't be productive, and that's what we need is productive employees.
Right.
20 after, we'll be right back with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Back, it's 23 after. Little rock and roll music there for Joan Pride, our senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. You like that Steppenwolf music, don't you, Joan?
What? What?
Joan,
wrong with it. It's just old.
It's classic. It's not old, Joan. It's classic. It's like me. It's not old. It's classic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's like fine wine.
Now
we don't
I see
get
where
old.
This is going.
We're not getting older. We're getting better.
You say so.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay.
Joan, one of the things that you guys recommend that employers and employees do in this partnership that I'm proposing, that I'm encouraging people to think about, you know, if you're an employee, don't think of it, of your benefits as an entitlement. Think of it as something that you need to be proud of and that your employer is providing for you, and do what you can to help them, because this is not... They're not crying wolf. If your employer is concerned and maybe even frightened of what's going on with the benefit situation, they're not crying wolf. This is real. This is the real thing. And if they're upset, if they're concerned about what's going on, they've got a right to be. And one of the things that you guys recommend, Joan, is that we look into customizing basically the health care for each employee, where they can choose optional benefits, right?
Right, really kind of a smorgasbord, because obviously different employees have different needs, and that way you kind of I guess, use the dollars, the finite number of dollars, more judiciously.
Well, and this is good news for employees, Joan, because if you're beyond childbearing age, then that means you probably need to be thinking about long-term care, maybe.
Right. Well, I can remember when I was a young kid and just starting out, the health insurance that we had was pretty generic, and it really favored people who were older who got sick more often because mm-hmm. the deductible was high enough that, I mean, I rarely went to the doctor, and it didn't encourage me to, say, go once a year for a checkup because it 100% was coming out of my pocket through the deductible.
Right. That was low those many years ago, right?
Yes, thank you for pointing that out.
Well, these are all things, folks, to think about, and if I can say anything one more time, it's think of your relationship with your employees and employers as a partnership, and bosses, sit down with your folks, and this would be an excellent example of something to lay out on the table and say, okay, folks, look, here's what this company can afford to pay without going broke. And to continue to keep certain services available, here's what we can afford to pay. It's this much money. And we divide that out among all of you, all of us here. Here's how much it is per employee. Here's how much it actually costs to take care of you. Who's going to come up with the difference?
Right.
I mean that's really oversimplifying, but those, Joan, it seems to me that those kinds of conversations must be had.
Well, yeah, you have to be involving the employee in the situation so they can see that the employer isn't trying to rip them off. They're struggling to cope with these high costs.
Exactly. And we're going to get into pension plans in just a minute, too, Joan. But before we do, let's move over and talk about the energy bill that didn't happen. Tell us about it.
Well, that energy bill was quite something. It got kind of unwieldy toward the end. We do think that it's going to be back and make it next year. There were a lot of major issues in it that couldn't get resolved. It was mainly the tax issues that didn't get resolved.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of sort of sank under its own weight toward the end.
How much production was in the energy bill? Was there anything with regard to drilling and exploration and that sort of thing involved in the energy bill?
One of the interesting things about this bill is what was not in it, which was drilling in the Alaska National Wildlife Reserve.
Up there where little Bambi is and Thumper?
Yeah. Hey, I love little Bambi. I don't want to hurt little Bambi. But the interesting thing is that when President Bush was elected, that sort of the conventional wisdom was that drilling in ANWR would be a slam dunk, and it turned out not to be, which kind of surprised me.
Well, they haven't really pushed it that hard, have they?
No, I think, I don't know if they're trying not to get the environmentalists too angry at them.
Until the second term.
I would have thought maybe. I would have thought that they would have worked harder on that.
Well, maybe they're waiting to, you know, get reelected, and then you know, once he can't be real, he doesn't have to worry about reelection, you know, he can go for it.
Well, that's a good segue. We're going to be talking about the Medicare bill later, and you hit the nail on the head in terms of the timing for that bill, because that bill doesn't get going until 2006, well into the second term.
You mean politics has reared its ugly head, Joan? Is that what
never,
you're saying?
Never, no. You're so cynical.
But, you know, the back to the energy thing, this bill has been going on for a long time, and it'll be interesting to see. But I would say that's going to be one of the main things they'll take up next year, wouldn't you?
Oh, definitely. And it really got a push after the major August blackout in mm-hmm. the eastern states. That really pushed that more to the front and center. But, you know, there's an awful lot of tax breaks in here, and it's going to get awful expensive if they keep all those in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the main thing, you know, the thing back to on the energy thing, Joan, is that concerns me is something you guys have reported in your letters in the last few months, and that is not just our continued dependence upon foreign petroleum, but our increasing dependence upon foreign petroleum. After 30 years since the embargo of the 70s, Joan, we've learned and accomplished really nothing in terms of becoming self-sufficient. We are more dependent upon foreign oil, and are more so every year than we have ever been in the past.
Boy, it sure looks that way, unfortunately.
And the trend, we don't like this trend at all, folks. We got to fix it somehow. 29 after, we're going to be right back with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
A band is blowing Dixie, double.
celebrating 6 years as radio's small business superhero. He's a syndicated radio host, syndicated columnist, author of 2 books, and all-around nice guy.
He's everywhere! He's everywhere!
The most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
He's Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with us today. 800-531-3815 and our website, www.jbsba.com. That's the short one, jbsba.com. Or you can go to the, if you like typing, you can type. We have a long one for you, smallbusinessadvocate.com. Or if you just remember my name, jimblassingame.com, that'll work. And either way, you can get to where you can subscribe to my free newsletter. You can read articles. You can check out the archives. You can hear a replay of this show if you just can't get enough of Joan's lilting voice. Joan Pride, our guest this hour. If you just can't get enough of her wisdom and her wit and her acerbic humor, you can do that by listening to the replay for the next 24 hours. How about that, Joan? Pretty cool.
Oh,
huh?
Boy. Dream come true.
That's right. Yeah, I can see that. Okay, Joan, let's talk about the Medicare bill. Now, that was big news last month, wasn't it?
Well, it was huge. It was kind of touch and go there toward the end. But in the end, Congress did pass and send to the president a major change in Medicare, which adds a prescription drug benefit, although not beginning until 2006.
All right. What's the major change?
The addition of the prescription drug benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
which the Democrats have been wanting pretty much, haven't they?
Right. Well, there was a lot of back and forth on this, though, because a lot of conservative Republicans said we shouldn't be expanding this entitlement program unless we put some kind of new restrictions on the sort of exploding costs of the program.
Mm-hmm.
So you had two things going on. First of all, you had the addition of the prescription drug benefit. But on the other side, you had this new element of means testing, which means that beginning in 2007, upper-income seniors will be paying a higher Part B Medicare Part B premium.
Mm-hmm. But and of course they've come up with a $400 billion ticket for this.
But a large part of that $400 billion is sort of payoffs to doctors and hospitals to get on board. You know, This was a very fragile coalition that they had to really work to keep together.
It was. But tell us why the Democrats. Tell us the main reason the Democrats didn't like this bill, Joan.
Well, I mean, what I would say, I don't think you're going to say the same thing, but I would say one of the main reasons that a die-in-the-wool Democrat wouldn't like this bill is that it's changing the face of a major entitlement program.
Well, that's a red herring. The real reason the Democrats didn't like this bill is because the Republicans sponsored it. The Republicans promoted it, and in the next election, the Republicans are going to get the credit for it. That's the real reason.
But you know what? Maybe they didn't like it because it's a bad bill.
Well, but they wouldn't. I mean, Joan, they wouldn't like it. I mean, and the Republicans would be doing the same thing. I mean, if the Democrats all of a sudden decided they wanted to be, you know, to increase the army, and I mean, this is politics at its classic, isn't it?
Well, you know, when seniors find out how little benefit they're really going to get from this,
yeah,
I'm not sure how thrilled they're going to be. But once, as I said before, they're not going to figure this out until well into the second term.
Right. After, and that was what you were saying earlier. It's
right.
Politics at its classic, if not worse.
Right.
Okay, Joan, let's get into the pension situation now. We've got some news on the pension front, and you can blend this into to the benefits thing that we talked about earlier if you want to. But what's the news on the pension front?
Well, as you know, traditionally pension plan sponsors, when they determine what their future liabilities are going to be and whether they have enough money to cover them, have had to use, when they're valuing all of that, they have had to use a rate based on 30-year Treasury rate. But as you know, Treasury doesn't issue the 30-year bond anymore.
Right.
And so the 30-year bond rates out there are artificially low. And plan sponsors have said, hey, this is in the law. And they said, you need to change the law. And they've been trying to do that and trying to get it done by the end of the year, and they failed to do it. So what we're hoping is that they will finish that up at the beginning of next year.
And what will the change mean?
Well, the change will mean, first of all, the change will be, at least on a temporary basis, that plan sponsors will be allowed to use a rate that's sort of a composite of long-term high yield, high quality corporate bond rates. And so that means that if they can value these liabilities at a more realistic level, they won't have to put as much in, and
right.
so they won't lose as much money.
Right. So what's happening is the actuarial requirements of these funds, they need a little help with the yield, so
right.
that they don't have to fund them for as in terms of a contingent liability.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, that makes sense. We're going to be right back after these messages. It's 22. When we come back, we're going to talk about trade, and then we're going to talk about workers' compensation. There's some news out there on that, and look at the economy. We might even look at across the pond over into some other countries in just a little bit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you, and coming up straight ahead in our show, we've got John Putnam's going to be back, and we're going to talk about financial planning when John joins us. Laura Delaney is going to be joining us, and we're going to talk about global trade with her, small businesses doing global trade. Jan Yeager is going to be back to talk to us about business protocol, especially during the holidays, and Ed Yordan is one of our top technology experts. He's one of the world's top technology experts, and he's going to be with us to talk about small business technology, and that's coming up in the show straight ahead. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and Joan, your Kiplinger Letter is now in its 81st year. That's the weekly publication you guys send out by electronic email or by print every week. You have three biweekly letters, the California, the Tax, and the Agriculture Letter. And Joan, are those also electronic and print? Those three?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
You can get them any way you want.
The Agriculture, the Tax, and the
California.
California Letter. And then also the magazine. Now, that's not electronic,
right.
but it's in print everywhere, though, isn't it?
Well, you know, and it's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. But if you go on to www.kiplinger.com, a lot of the content that you would otherwise mm-hmm. find in the magazine is on the website. Although I still think it's important to go out there and buy that magazine, you know.
Well, you know,
have it on paper.
And it is available in newsstands, too, folks.
Absolutely,
Kiplinger's
yeah.
Personal Finance Magazine. But I really do encourage you to check out the website, Kiplinger.com. It's a dynamite site, and I think you'll like it. And there's a lot of good free stuff there. So check it out and see if you like what these guys do. And if you get a chance, subscribe to their publications. Pick one out that you think you'll like. I particularly like the Kiplinger Letter because I've known about it for, golly, over 20, 30 years maybe. And so it's a good one. And they still have that the Blasingame 30-day free trial, folks, that I worked so hard to get for you. So
absolutely.
Check that out when you get a chance. Okay, let's talk about trade tensions. Joan, there's a lot of on the one hand, it's almost like they're parallel universes, Joan. On the one hand, there's all this all these plans and trade deals that are being negotiated. And then on the other, in this other parallel universe, there's all this acrimony about tariffs and quotas and all that, isn't there?
Well, it's kind of strange because there is this supposed drive toward free markets and, you know, balanced trade and all of that, but you still have all these simmering disputes. You know, a big one right in the news right now is having to do with the U.S. steel tariffs, which I think are about to be removed.
I hope so.
And another one is about a U.S. export tax subsidy, a tax subsidy on U.S. exporters that the EU went to the World Trade Organization and got permission to levy sanctions against. Unless mm-hmm. we repeal that thing. We haven't done it yet, but we're getting close.
Yeah, the steel tariff thing was a bad policy, by the way, folks. And that was Mr. Bush's a big mistake that he made. I hope he fixes
sure
that
was.
Mistake real soon. But Joan, that was a case. It was more than just the policy itself. It was more of an icon for why. They don't want to, you know, other countries didn't want to negotiate with us in good faith on some of these trade deals. I mean, Mr. Bush was saying, you know, let's open up our trade, but not on steel.
Yeah, and that sort of sends the wrong message.
Well, yeah, it's a mixed message, and it's unfortunate. But I'm going to go back to what I've said before, Joan, and what Frederick Bastiat said over 150 years ago. When goods cross borders, armies don't.
Ooh, that's true.
So free trade is good. But one of the things Americans have to realize, Joan, is we can't enjoy the benefits of free trade and then complain if it reorders the way jobs are. I mean, people don't like it when we lose a textile job, but they like paying $30 for a $60 shirt.
Sure, you can't have it both ways. Absolutely,
right. We've got to be fair, even-handed about that, and realize that free trade means that some things are going to be made different places. But what hurts right now, Joan, is that we're in this transition period. And it's creating some dramatic winners and losers, isn't it?
Well, it sure is, no question.
With the jobs going, you know, wherever they're going to go, and we just have to realize that this is something that's inevitable. And
that's
it's not about politics, is it, Joan? It's just about the way the free market system works. And the thing is, Joan, is the more we can get China, for example, to be involved in trade with the world, the less of a danger they're going to be to the world.
Well, and that goes back to your statement about when goods trade borders, across borders, guns don't.
That's exactly right. Joan, let's talk about worker compensation. There's some new overtime rules coming in 2004. Tell us about it.
Right. They're coming in 2004 from the Bush administration. And the thing is, I think there's a lot of concern about loss of overtime pay, but we're saying that there won't be a lot of white-collar workers that will lose overtime pay. You know, that's what the unions have been saying, but they're really not right about that.
Mm-hmm. So, what's the truth on it?
Well, what we're saying is companies that employ managers earning $425 a week or less will see expenses rise because the rules make them eligible for overtime.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I haven't followed this one all that much, but the thing is that, you know, some managers also, especially if they have any leveraged component in their compensation, you know, overtime gives them the opportunity to leverage their income.
That's
if
right.
If they work harder. And,
sure.
And, but this is a kind of a sticky wicket issue. When we come back, we're going to talk about, something that Joan's not going to be too happy about. The IRS is targeting big-shot executive compensation. And, Joan, I know that you're worried about
this. Here we go.
Ten till. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And they said you were going to put me on a shelf. But let me tell you, I got some news for you.
We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, I know you're pretty busted up about this. According to Kiplinger, the IRS is targeting executive compensation for some really high-powered executives, and they're breathing down your neck, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm very concerned about this, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a high-powered executive.
And also, there's good news on the business travel. I know you'll be happy about this because you'll be able to make a last-minute flight and still get your favorite seat, Joan. The airlines are making more business class seats available.
Yeah, that's interesting. We're saying more business class only flights in certain markets, I guess because most of the travelers in these markets are business people.
Yeah.
So, you know, more
those are the expensive seats, though. Those are the
that's true.
That's the high-rent district, which is where you fly, and so I knew you'd be happy to see this, Joan.
I've read about some airlines that are removing first class from some of their planes because it's just not worth it anymore.
Well, there's not much difference. In fact, the business class tickets are the same price as the first class ticket.
I was going to say that, yeah.
I think the difference between business class, I've heard, Joan, the difference between business and first class is just the vintage of the champagne that they serve.
Right.
Maybe a year or two difference in the champagne.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the economy, Joan. We need to put our sunglasses on?
Boy, I think so. 8.2% growth in the third quarter. Ouch.
Can you believe that? It went from 6.2 to 7.2 to 8.2. By January, Joan, there's no telling where it could be.
I know. Do I hear double digits?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's almost, I tell you, I wish they wouldn't do this, though, because it makes me nervous when they do that. We're going to have our Fed Watch show next week and next Tuesday, and when when we do, I'm going to ask my economist experts that, if this isn't almost bad news because the Fed doesn't like to see that kind of growth.
Well, interesting you should say that. There was just an article in today's Wall Street Journal saying that many companies are going into the debt markets now, raising money now, even if they don't need it right now, because they're worried about rising interest rates. So
very smart.
I think people are beginning to realize that this recovery is real.
Well, the recovery is real. It's actually not I think we're out of the recovery, Joan. I think we're into the expansion. And
yeah.
But this interest rate thing is real because, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think they're going to raise rates. In fact, the Fed, as you know, has said they've used the word for a considerable period. They're not going to raise rates for a considerable period. Those were the two controversial words that they used. But still, there is a deficit out there.
You could define that any way you want. That could be 3 months. It could be 6 months. You know, that could mean rising interest rates by the middle of next year. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's not outside of the realm of possibility.
You guys also point out that rising business costs are going to be part of a stronger economy, too.
Well, you know, there's always a downside, and we always have to find it, and that's it.
Well, otherwise, you'd be pure Pollyannas, and it would be pretty annoying. Gas prices, natural gas prices are going to remain high, historic levels, you say.
Boy, yeah. Expect them to average about $5 per million BTU. It's twice their average in the 90s.
Yeah.
And, this is going to be a cold winter, so you can expect them to go even higher.
And, of course, we're already, gasoline prices are still higher to me than they ought to be. And of course, we've already talked about health care costs. And, Joan, I mean, at some point in time, we've got to reconcile these cost increases with price increases, but and see, this is the challenge for operating a business. Still, most of us have no pricing power, and because of the global kind of a deflationary trend, because of productivity, it's what Gary Schilling calls good deflation, which is holding prices down, but our expenses are going up.
Right, and you're really boxed in there.
Yeah, Joan, let's move over and talk about China a little bit. What about the trade with those guys? Is that going to improve any?
Well, it's kind of a tough situation. We're saying that they're going to talk tough. Chinese are going to talk tough, but they're not going to go to the extent that the EU has been going to and threaten retaliation.
Well, they need us to buy their goods.
Yeah, and they know that.
Yeah, and of course, China is going to be something that Mexico hasn't become. They're going to become importers. They're going to be buying our stuff. They're going to be buying our goods and services. And
you say pent-up demand? Sure.
Oh,
in that country? Absolutely.
You're exactly right about that. No question about it. But, Joan, one of the things that's going to contribute to some problems with China and trade is going to be Taiwan, the issue between Taiwan and the mainland China.
Yeah, and that's never really gone away.
It's heating up right now, as you know,
yeah.
And so we'll have to keep our eyes on that. Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today, as always.
Thank you, Jim.
It's good to have you back, and we'll see you next week.
Absolutely.
Joan Pride, folks. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank you for everything that you mean to this economy and to the world. Small business owners, you're my heroes. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.